Hello and welcome to another episode of All Tomorrow's Festivals. I'm Nick Sherrod from Label Sessions and a slightly reluctant futurist, and I'm also joined by Josh Nixon, our content producer. Hello, Josh.
Hi, how are you doing, Nick?
Good. So we have just come off a conversation with Sam Apema, whose show this year is called, but let's bring up the full title, is Dear Annie, I Hate You. And actually, this is the first person we've interviewed in this series who's actually bringing a show back, although... despite the fact that last year this show won all kinds of different awards and was very well reviewed in all kinds of different magazines and newspapers, actually one of the stories in this interview was actually the show has changed quite a lot in the last while. And interestingly, Sam was saying she thinks it's become more honest.
Mm.
And we should also say this interview takes place in the rehearsal room. Sam's working in London, so there are some sounds of South London, I guess, soundscape that come into the background of it a little bit. And we should also say as well that we realized going back through the transcript that in the interview we kind of allude to the fact that the show is about a health issue Hassan had in the past.
Yeah,
that is a brain end was what she had, so it was quite serious stuff in the past. As we'll hear, this is a story that is about Sam, but in the play is about Annie, and it's interesting in terms of some of the ways in which it's kind of using a kind of format or a live performance in the play to tell a story in a very live environment. And I asked about that. I thought it was kind of interesting, actually, because for those of you who don't know, Josh is a documentary filmmaker by background.
Mm-hmm.
She was very keen on this idea that there is something different about live performance. There's something different about her being there telling her story in front of an audience. Although doing that in a very kind of theatricalized way, right? So in terms of its... you know, this is very much a theatre piece rather than a stand-up piece or something. It's not just someone just standing up and telling your story, but that kind of idea of honesty is a really interesting theme, I think, in the whole.
Yeah, this is the first person that we've asked where they've seen it as solely a theatre piece rather than something that can expand into other fields, because we've had a lot of people think it could be a TV show, it could be a book.
Before we head into the interview, let's just call it out. So the show is on at 12 o'clock every day. At the Pleasance 2, it's in the Pleasance Courtyard. Every year at some point, I go to a show in the Pleasance and end up in the wrong one. So Pleasance Courtyard 2 at the Pleasance Courtyard at 12 o'clock. But for now, let's head in. So Sam, so this year, what can audiences expect when they come to your show?
The first thing I'll tell you is that you can expect real tequila shots. And a really fun all-American spring break. But on top of that, I would say that you can definitely expect a very visceral ride about a true story that is fun, entertaining, and hopefully very affecting.
The real tequila shot comes up in the video as well, right? The show, this is heavily heavily promoed tequila shot.
It's how we get our Edinburgh audience in. You know, we go around and we say, you want a free shot? Come to the show.
Yeah, that's right. That's quite on it for target market, I think. Definitely. So this is interesting. You're one of the first people in this series who's bringing a show back, if you like. You've had it in Edinburgh before, very successfully, lots of awards and things. So how come you wanted to bring it to Edinburgh in 2025? Like, why now and why here?
Yeah, really good question. It's because the show is kind of continued. Last year was an experimental iteration to kind of see if this idea had any legs. And then we fortunately had a really wonderful, really fun run where people really responded to it. And the last year, we've just been developing it into really fun, exciting iterations. And we did one at Riverside. And from there, I think this time we're bringing it to Edinburgh was always, I don't know, I think it's because Edinburgh is such a wonderfully experimental, exciting, alive place to bring something, that this iteration is very much different than the previous iterations. And the iteration that we did at Riverside right before this was also very different. But I think that this one in particular is like, it's kind of bringing a new show. And I feel like Edinburgh is just kind of our home where we get to, where we really like to experiment with what's working and if people are responding to it in a really fun way. So yeah, it just feels exciting and daring and like kind of terrifying to bring back something that's already won some awards, already gotten really good reviews and things like that, and completely change it again. But that Edinburgh is the place that you can do that. And that's very exciting to me, I think, as an artist.
Okay, it's really interesting. Let's take us on that journey. So where did the show start out from? So it sounds like lots of change even since last year. Did you kind of have a vision in your head at the start for where you wanted it to go, or has it felt more genuinely kind of like you're feeling your way isn't, but maybe each step?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's really interesting because I think I always knew when I first embarked on this journey sort of what its ideal iteration would look like. And I think we keep getting closer and closer to that in a really exciting way. But I think what's been really the most genuine part of the journey and the most fun and interesting as an individual living it is that the first iteration we brought to Edinburgh last year was kind of the very earnest version of it and a place where I was at in terms of the events that had happened and sharing the story. And now I think we've added this extra layer that feels the most honest and true of what actually happened. And that actually, when I was doing it at Fringe last year, that was a version of the story that I was trying to kind of make this show that is earnest and genuine and like wanted to get applause for it. And now we're kind of commenting on that this time and saying, you know what, actually, I thought I was recovered when I was doing this show the first time, and kind of bringing that up, I think, in a really interesting way of asking myself and others of why do we do these shows about these things that happen to us, and is it as a way to try to get over it? Because I think the thing I realized from Edinburgh was that I still wasn't over it in some ways, to put it bluntly. And I think that now I have really gotten over it in the last year of my life and really processed it. And that's what we're putting into the show this time. That's why Annie comes crashing in. That's what the reason is for all of these things, is really that she really needs to undergo a reckoning, because she thinks she's gotten better and gotten through this thing. And really, as the show events go on, Annie really proves that she hasn't, which I think is really true to life. But
okay. There's so much that's in there as well, because also people, so I'm conscious, a lot of people listen to this may have seen the show last year, and we fucking day up, well, it's the same show coming back, and it's a whole new story. A lot of people that are coming into it for the first time, there's some interesting layers there, right? So this is a story that's very close to you and about you to some extent, but equally you talk about the character that you've created for the show as somebody else. It's a character that's there, or how does that all operate?
Yeah, that's another great question. I think that's what's been the most exciting thing is, I think that it is me, but it was a version of me that existed. And every time it kind of feels like the new evolution of myself as we do it. And something that the show really gets pushed into, because it's very much based on not just a true event and what happened, but like it was a life-threatening event. It was a very serious event where you're talking about very serious things, in the show. And so I think because of that, the show's often been pushed into sort of this trauma play of like, oh, it's for people that have been through things like this. And I think that served its purpose in the first two iterations, because I've always wanted, you know, people that have been through it to feel like they can watch the show and feel like they're seeing something represented on Shade. But actually, what is exciting about this iteration, and I think the most honest version, is that it's actually for people that maybe need to undergo what I underwent and what the character of Sam undergoes within the play, which is a real reckoning of this thing that she's avoiding and that she is really trying to say, I am better. I'm making a show about it. I'm great. And I think it's just a much harsher look at the reality of those events and actually saying, like, get to the truth of what was really going on. So I think that's what is the big change, and what's exciting is that the first version we've had put at Riverside was very much akin to, a piece that people would watch and feel really like healed from, because it's maybe they've gone through a life-changing event and seen it, and you know, and so I think it's been a really hard thing, but exciting thing as audience members have followed us and the show's changed, because it's always been a fear of mine of like, oh, am I going to lose those people? Because I don't want to negate that. I think that's a very important thing for people to have and experience. But also, can we add this layer in of really questioning, was she healed? Is she healed? Like, what really takes what really, yeah, it takes getting over a thing like that.
Okay. That's interesting too, though, because I guess the other follow-up question to that is, you know, in Edinburgh during August, there's people we're speaking to who are in the book festival, the art festival, the film festival, and they can tell personal stories, but then it becomes like an object, and they ask the people and take everyone through it. Have you always had a real sense? I mean, I know it's your kind of professional background as well, but have you always, like, or maybe the better way of putting it is, how come you want to do this as a live performance and go through it every night or every day at 12 o'clock in this case, and go through it live in the room? Is that important to you? Is that just the way that your kind of creativity works? Or is there something about live performance that you think is important?
I think it is live. Like, I think it's important that it's live because, I mean, it's interesting because the show after Edinburgh last time has gotten some TV interest in it. So it's very interesting developing this show as a play and then starting to look at that as well. Because I think that the live aspect is really important because it is a live reckoning of like watching someone. You can't turn away from the car crash in some ways. And I think that's really important of that. You were eliciting the feelings and the emotions from a safe distance of watching a performer go through it, and a performer that you know is fine, but you're really bringing people through that in a way that, yeah, is asking them really hard questions, and that catharsis that you need, that you leave the theater being like, whoa, I feel, you know, the goal is to really have them leave feeling changed. And I think that TV can accomplish that, but I don't think that there's anything better than a live performance and a live witnessing of that really gets at that reckoning. Yeah, it's most effective.
Uh-huh. But it sounds like it's very much you're really conscious of the audience reaction to it. You're kind of, that's very much been part of the sort of almost sort of co-creative as you've gone through the journey, in terms of you're conscious of how people are responding and thinking, is that what I wanted? Is that where I want to go next?
Yeah. Yeah, very much. I think it's really influenced. I really love taking all of the audience interactions. I love taking like the best reviews and the worst reviews and the best feedback and the worst feedback, and saying, I think they all have such worth to them. And I think that is ultimately the pieces for the audience. So I really enjoy listening to the audience feedback and saying, and not necessarily creating the show around it, but using it to say, is this the reaction I was looking for? And I think the harsh truth that has led to something really exciting that we're bringing to Fringe with this version is that it kept going into people thinking, you know, leaving it and being like, oh, wow, what, she's so impressive. What she went through was so, you know, they leave too impressed with the story. And actually, we want them to leave questioning how the story applies to their own lives and reflecting on themselves. So I think once we start seeing that feedback of that, and I think we see that more and more every time we do it. And I think audience members that have returned for every iteration so far have felt that as well. So I think that's what's really exciting. But yeah, and I think it's important that it's not just live, but that I'm the one telling the story because it happened, and it kind of brings it into this weird space of, is this actually happening live? Is she actually, you know, having this happen, or is this theater? And I think that's a really exciting thing to kind of toe the line.
Okay. Yeah, that's really nice. Let's pick up on the theatricality. I guess there's lots of kind of interesting things in this show as well, around use of sounds, the kind of theatricality of it. Again, was that always part of the kind of idea for this show, or is that something that kind of happened at some point in the process?
Yeah, no, it was not always. Last year when we brought it to the Fringe, it was originally, I had no budget for the show. It was going to be, you know, it was basically Fleabag with health issues, if I'm being honest. And it was, you know, it was just a hospital bed, and it was just going to be me. And, you know, I just couldn't afford any of it. And I got really lucky. And I had booked an acting, a commercial that I just took the paycheck and I said, I don't even want to look at this. I just want to throw it into the show. And we ended up hiring the incredible team that we're working with today. And once we did that, I rewrote the whole script with 2 weeks to go before we started rehearsals. And I said, like, this is what I've always wanted it to be. I want it to feel like we're inside of the brain, you know, that she's using science to justify these things and tell this story. And that's kind of evolved all of the sound and all of the set decisions. And that's how it's been. Yeah, it's been very devised in that way of, because the set is its own character, Sam has to respond to the sound and the sound has to respond to her and all of the TVs and everything is in response to each other, especially this iteration, I would say. Everything is very detailed of like when something comes crashing in that Sam is not trying, you know, internally is trying to shut down the set and her brain and Annie won't let her. And vice versa, there's other elements where Sam will really control the story and the set and the sound and her brain will sort of work in tandem with that. But I think that's what's really fun is making the set and the character, you know, communicate and be in dialogue.
Yeah. Okay. And then just a slight practical question within that, which is taking a show like that to the Edinburgh Festival in August, is there a fear factor there? Or is that something like in terms of, because, you know, we've talked a bit about in this series, actually, people listen, like there's not much time for tech if you're on the Fringe Festival in particular, even compared to any of the other festivals on during August. I mean, so is it just something you just head on into knowing it's going to be tough, or does it actually limit some of what you might want to do?
I think it has forced us to be wonderfully specific. Like right now, while we're talking, I have about 7 tabs pulled up on my computer about like cue changes and specific markings and a spreadsheet where everyone can see the cues that we've changed and things like that for this iteration, because there's so little time that it's like, all right, everyone, we're going in. But I think I and the team kind of love that. It is to talk about something that you asked earlier in that question, is it terrifying? Yes, I would say it's absolutely terrifying to bring a high-tech show to Edinburgh, because for people that have been, they know Edinburgh is not necessarily tech friendly and is everyone sort of sitting on the edge of their seats, like panicking, like what's gonna not work today? Yes, that's us before the show every time. And I think actually we're going to do a really fun way of integrating that into the beginning of the show, because it is so unpredictable that we're just going to kind of play into that in a fun way. But yeah. It's terrifying.
Okay. And then I guess it's interesting for you. So like you've had last year, you kind of had, I think, a lot of the Edinburgh experience that a lot of people hope for when they go, right? You took a show, it kind of resonated with people, they kind of won awards, those kind of things. Mm. What was that experience? I don't know if whether you've been to the festival lots of times before that as well, or like, what was last year like for you?
It was, I think I'm still processing it, yeah, to be honest. It was wild. I had never been to Fringe. I had only heard about it. And so to bring a really ambitious show, B, my personal story, and C, at a venue that wasn't necessarily one of the most well-known places to put something, and then get recognized with these awards and have it sell out and stuff, I mean, was, to be honest, in hopefully not an egotistical way, one of the best, I think, most affirming moments in my life, because it had taken me a really long time to even feel like this story was worth telling. I never thought it was very interesting, and it took a lot of people in my life to convince me to make the piece about it. And I think even up till the moment that we performed it, when we first got there, and when we performed it was the first time we had ever run it too. Like we had not had time to really rehearse it at all. And we were just, and it was one of the most terrifying experiences other than getting brain surgery of my life. And I think it was just wild, because you had no choice but to jump off the cliff, and then to see people respond to it was incredible. But I will say every iteration we do, it is that same feeling, because I'm getting more honest about the events every single time. So I think in a lot of ways, it's exciting and terrifying, because then you get these really great responses and people are like, why are you changing it? And it's like, well, because there's more to it. And I wasn't being maybe as honest as I should have been in the first iteration. So it's exciting. But yeah, it will be once again terrifying. And I will be asking my girl if everyone hates me or not before I get up on stage.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then just flipping up on that question before, which is, so it's such a personal show to you. There's so many different elements to it. You know, why is Edinburgh in August the place you're coming back to this year that you took it to last time? You know, there's lots of different Fringe festivals now even. What is it about Edinburgh that has that factor for you?
No, you have to answer that question. It's very addicting, you know. Edinburgh's just it's a great place to be. It's, you know, I just don't think, when I think about having to do a show for a month, that is, it's a lot to do that show. It's a physical feat to do that show. And it's also an emotional feat to do that show. And And I just think about, well, if I have to spend the rest of my time somewhere and I want to enjoy myself amidst it, I just think Edinburgh is a theater kid's dream to be there for a month. It feels like camp in a lot of ways, you know? So I think it kind of protects me and the piece in a way of it's really a nice place to forget and not get so tied up with like your own success and all of the things that don't really matter at the end of the day. And you can just really enjoy being with other artists, getting inspired by other pieces and meeting so many new people and different types of artists that you just stop thinking about your show, which is the best place to be. Yeah. So I guess drowning out my thoughts.
Not being thinking about the show and then doing it every day. This is the weird, like, the double-sided thing of this.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's such a fun place, though. I mean, and honestly, it feels like home. It wouldn't feel right bringing it to another festival because it was first loved and received at Edinburgh. It feels like this is a love letter back to Edinburgh saying, you know, we appreciate you. You gave me the start of this show and everything I love with my career that's happened thus far. And it feels like giving it back to them and saying, you know, like, join us once more and we're going to have a great time kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's really nice. Yeah. There's, so I want to zoom out quickly before we talk about like what you're excited about in the festival this year and such.
Right.
But just zooming out just quickly, you know, it's a weird time in the world right now and it's a weird time in the creative world. But when you look around you, are there things kind of in the scene just now that you think are really exciting or positive?
Yes. Yes. I think people are starting to really get more absurd and daring and interesting with their art in a really exciting way. I think a few years ago, if you pitched a story about a girl anthropomorphizing her brain aneurysm on a stage, it would not have... It probably wouldn't have gone over very well. And in case I know that because it didn't when I pitched it a few years ago, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think it's a really exciting time where people, you know, we live in this absurd time where the world is an absurd place. And I think that art is starting to reflect that in a really exciting way. And I love seeing things that I think is why I've always loved science fiction and fantasy when it's done. At its best, it's reflecting our world, but you're getting to live in another one. You know, you're kind of getting to escape the reality we live in, but that it still holds messages and everything that we can bring into our current world. And I think that's what I'm really excited about is just seeing art that reflects that kind of stuff. Yeah, I love it.
It's an interesting word. So you're very right in terms of especially... you can sort of see it in the snapshot of the festivals. Even before the pandemic, 2019, it got to a point where even the comedians weren't really telling jokes anymore, right? Everything got very serious, right?
Yeah.
Now everyone's telling very dark stories to some level, but with a real sense of the absurd and with laughter and comedy. Yeah. There's a real sort of shift in that, even over the past narrow number of years.
Yeah, really interesting. And I think we're also collectively as a society coming out of, you know, it's interesting, and I think I know this because of what I went through in the show, but like, you know, you come out of a trauma and you don't process it till years later sometimes. And I think that's what's happening collectively with us right now with the pandemic is we're kind of now finally saying, oh wow, that thing really affected us actually. That really had an impact on all of us and our lives and who we are. And so I think it's fun in some ways to watch people start to deal with that in really interesting creative ways of absurdity and other things and finding ways to talk about it that we can all relate to now. Yeah.
Okay. And then just quickly, are there things that are kind of scary when you look around or things that you think are less positive, negative even in the scene?
Well, yeah, Nick, we're like, I come from America right now. So it's a very, I think it's just, in general, I think what's the most scary is if people aren't being daring with their art. I think that is the thing that I see as being really dangerous. And I think I see that a lot it's also why I love Edinburgh, because it's a daring place and it refuses to not be. And I love that. I think that is so important to protect. And I think that, you know, we see in like Hollywood and other shows and things that are getting churned out at the moment, it's very safe. It doesn't dare to say anything. And the whole point of why art ever existed in the first place and has continued to exist throughout the history of time is to point out the thing, is to talk about the hard thing. So I think that's what we're called to do as artists, and that's my little soapbox that I will not get off of.
Oh, that's good. So everyone wants to stay on that one. That's good. So we are talking in July. We're a few weeks away from August. I don't know when you're actually coming north to Edinburgh, but what are you excited about in the Edinburgh month? Like, in terms of, it might be things you want to do or other shows you want to see. Like, what are you kind of excited about in August?
Last year, I was so consumed with the show that I think I was just this young, like, I got to do this. I got to do it right, you know, when you get really, yeah. And so this year, I am utterly excited to just enjoy the festival. I, you know, my poor producing partner is like, well, I have aims for this, you know, for the show, you know, for us to do it. And I'm like, I don't. I want to enjoy it. I want people to enjoy it. And then I want to have a great time. Yeah. And I never got to hike Arthur's Seat last year. I was so busy, you know, things like that. So I just want to take in all Edinburgh has to offer, and then, yeah, just see some. I really want to follow my nose and just see what's pulling me in the direction. But I just am really excited to, like, I've realized, you know, from winning those accolades and stuff and trying to play the game for about 2.5 seconds, it's not, I don't have it in me. It's not for me. I can't do it. So yeah, I'm excited to not do any of that and to just have a great time with people that I really enjoy being around.
Yeah. This is interesting, quickly. If you were giving advice to someone coming for the first time as an artist, would you say to think the first time you come, you just have to be quite intense about it? You have to kind of work out the rhythm, or do you think you can kind of enjoy it more?
Wow, that's a really hard question, because that's a really hard question. I don't regret being intense about it, but I do think only half of them or a quarter of them paid off in any way, and I would have got to where I was going anyways if I hadn't in some way. But I do think there's a balance. I think that if you're someone that has a tendency to always have fun and never network or do any of those things, I would say probably spend the time networking. But if you're someone that's like, I am gonna not ever break into this industry unless I network my show at Edinburgh and I need to spend all of my time, I would say just have some fun and the right people will come along. But that's a tough one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All your nose.
So that was Sam Epema. Her show is Dear Annie, I Hate You, on at 12 o'clock every day at Presence 2 at the Courtyards. It was interesting there, Josh, that bit around, there's definitely a theme we're picking up this year in particular around people dealing with some very dark stuff.
Yeah.
With the absurd, whether that's full-on clown or whatever, but really into the absurdity of stuff. And it was really interesting, I thought, Sam's take on that being kind of a reaction to the pandemic. Now we're 4 or 5 years past the start.
Yeah. And the other thing that I thought was interesting was that too, but also the idea of it being like a multimedia exploration, you know, showing like sort of clips and that sort of thing. It sort of reminds me a little bit of one of the previous people I spoke to, Tom Bailey, where he did a similar multimedia thing too. But that one obviously wasn't inherently as personal. It was a lot more global.
Yeah. Global, yeah. So, there's lots of dark things all over this series. Everybody laugh with it at some point. Laugh with it, laugh at it.
Yeah, darkly funny, as they say.
Good. Anyway, so there are lots more episodes wherever you get this podcast. You can find out more about the All Tomorrow's Festivals project at labelsessions.com or on any of our social handles, of which we're on pretty much everything as Label.
We are, yeah.
But we will see you all in the next episode.